Baltimore.
Welcome to the episode of the Interracial John Podcast. I'm your host, at Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
by a very white guy.
And you are very white indeed. How are you doing, my dear?
You know, I'm okay.
Just okay?
Yeah, my white people got me down. They disappoint me all the time.
Well, you know.
Like, a lot. Like, and you even said, like, I put way too much, you know, emphasis on white people doing the right thing. I haven't, even Chris Crash was like, you can't expect, you're going to get disappointed. And I don't know if I do expect anymore, but fuck. And we'll talk about it today, but just with Baltimore, it seems like it's the Baltimore uprising is some sort of divining rod for shitty white people. It's like, I've been secretly being a horrible person, but now I'm going to be openly terrible. Like, get out of here.
Well, if this is your first time joining us, you can find us on iTunes
Segway.
Or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. Or you can go to our website, interracialjohn.com. And, of course, we're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, at Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N again. So I guess we'll just start with Baltimore.
Baltimore.
You already started talking about
Sorry.
It. I'm sure everyone's, you know, I doubt anyone that is listening hasn't heard about the civil unrest that has been going on in Baltimore, which has been dubbed the Baltimore Uprising, in the wake of the murder by the Baltimore police of 25-year-old Freddie Gray, who was in police custody and after being taken. We still don't know why he was even approached by police, but for whatever reason they approached him. The end result was his spinal cord being severed in two places, his voice box being smashed, and he had other injuries, a broken leg and several other things. Baltimore obviously rightfully went and started protesting immediately. All of the social justice organizations there, clergy, all sorts of people started protesting immediately after the incident. After Friday's death, which was a week ago Sunday, so almost 2 weeks now. We're recording this Wednesday. And still, we have no information.
Do we know the names of those four?
We don't know their names.
Nothing.
We know nothing at all. And Saturday was a large scheduled, more formal protest, in that they were, it was publicized and people were asked to come and stand in solidarity with Baltimore. And we saw very small incidences of violent protest there. And of course, as the state is wont to do when they are wrong, have decided to turn Baltimore into a war zone. And I don't use that term lightly at all. There are military vehicles, military personnel. Curfew is in place. They're using tactical weapons like tear gas and pepper spray and flash bombs and all sorts
armored
of things.
Armored vehicles. They've got National Guard.
They've Baltimore.
Got police from six different states, the whole mid-Atlantic. Thousands, like 5,000 to 7,000 extra police. And, you know, I tweeted this the other day. You know, don't get fooled by that narrative about violent protests for so many reasons. But first and foremost, this is what the state wanted. This is what the oppressive regime wanted. They literally went out and set things in motion and say, okay, let's cancel school. Let's close down the transportation so these kids are kind of trapped at this mall area. And let's show up in riot gear. What the fuck do you think is going to happen? And even you go a step further, Meta. I just refuse, adamantly refuse. And I've really gone head to head with a lot of people on Facebook and Twitter about this, like strongly just, I refuse to condemn or condone, admonish anybody in any city, in Baltimore specifically, for the process, tactics, and reaction they have to inhuman conditions, to seek their own liberation. Who am I going to sit here and say, oh, you shouldn't have done that, you shouldn't do this, and here's a quote from MLK. It's just grotesque. I refuse, won't do it.
Yeah, It's you know, I'm not surprised by the reaction, especially of white America, generally speaking, because, you know, this was the same thing that they all said about Ferguson.
Of course.
What has been interesting to me, though, is the response from the black community. And I've seen the respectability politics bullshit come into play from people that I'm like, you were the one spouting about how stupid all of that is. And now here you are applying those same bullshit ass principles to the people of Baltimore. Let me tell you something. First of all, Baltimore and the people of Baltimore are amazing people. They have amazing hearts. They're genuine. They are, I don't even like that term salt of the earth, but it's an amazing city with amazing people that live there. And they have been living in, you know, the worst conditions that our country has to offer.
I don't know the exact statistics, but there are some that pointed for the size of the city that Baltimore is. They have individuals and residents living in conditions that are on like the World Health Organization scale, equal with, you know, fucking like, you know, places in the Middle East.
Yeah.
You know, what we would call third world countries.
Yes, that's what I mean when I say the worst that our country has to offer.
Yeah.
Okay. So when people say, oh, they're destroying their neighborhood, that's not their neighborhood. It belongs to somebody else, and that somebody else has allowed this situation to get to the point that it's at right now. And when you see a situation where police show up in riot gear and then a riot happens, I don't even understand the rationale of trying to come into this situation discussing any actions on the part of the people of Baltimore. Because let's not forget, they were not rioting. I'll put quotes around that because I don't even call it that. But there were no violent upheavals 2 weeks ago in Baltimore.
Nope. And for 13 days straight.
Generally in Baltimore, it's not as though every night people go out and throw rocks at police officers in Baltimore, Maryland. So when we talk about these situations, I'm so fucking sick of hearing people talk about the reaction to what happened versus what happened. And I can tell you this, if Freddie Gray spine had not been severed and him taken into police custody for a quote unquote rough nickel ride in the back of a vehicle shackled with no seatbelt and driven around to cause him bodily injury, none of this would be happening. So when you want to talk about why something's happening, that's why something is happening.
Agreed.
So I actually don't even want to talk about like the specifics of what happened or any of that, because I don't even think it has any place in any conversations that need to be had by anybody. The people of Baltimore, and there are plenty of organizations in Baltimore that have been doing difficult work in the worst of situations. The teachers in that city, the civil servants in that city, the volunteers for all of these amazing organizations that do, our clergy in that city. They have been doing difficult work under the worst circumstances possible to try and make the best of a city that they love and people that they love. So when I hear people go and start making these grandiose statements like, you know, what are we going to do? What does all of this do? Don't say shit like that when you don't know anything about what has already been being done in a city. Every city in this country has organizations that work hard every single day to try and make things better where they are. Every one of them. So to make some sort of statement about Baltimore because this is happening there right now, and again, it's happening because the police beat someone to death. That's why it's happening. To make some sort of grandiose statement as though this, the fact that these reactions are occurring, speaks to the possibility that no one's been doing anything in Baltimore. They just been waiting around, sitting around, Drew. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Nobody's been doing anything there.
No organization. No one's been working for Black Liberation. No one's been trying to correct the 100 police misconduct cases over the last, 4 years that have been settled for $5
million? $5.9 million in 4 years.
Yeah. You know, no one's been doing anything about that. We've just all been sitting around waiting for Freddie to die.
So that's my first thing. I just think it's fairly hypocritical. And all the people I hear saying this shit, I just ask you to look yourself in the mirror. Ask if it was your community that was under these deplorable conditions. You sit in your air-conditioned home, driving a nice car with your beautiful school systems that your children get to go to. And then you're going to pass judgment. on these children who were forced into a situation they couldn't even leave. They cut off their means of transportation. That mall is the hub of all transportation. Yeah. Most of the students in Baltimore, and I mean most of them starting at 6 years old, have to take public transportation to and from school every single goddamn day. So you let these children out of school. You pulled them off of buses that they were on, stranded them, and then closed them in.
What did you think was going to happen? With riot gear and then start peppering them with pepper spray. What the fucking thing is going to happen? You know, and I'll just...
When this shit happens in other countries, we're ready to go over there and send peacekeeping missions and send people to go help them and say something has to be done. But, you know, let some people come and do this shit to black people in this country and don't nobody give a fuck. Well, I'm sick of it.
The hypocrisy is rampant, as we've talked about. The, you know, riots after fucking... Penn State fires Joe Paterno, riots in Vancouver over a hockey fucking Stanley Cup. No one in those situations gets called thugs or animals. Or no one fucking talks about, you know, the epidemic of fatherless this or that. None of that bullshit happens, right? Because they're white and they're just letting off steam and a little bit drunk. But the to the people, and I hate to say that it includes some black folk, but mostly in my sphere, white folk. And there's, I would say, people that I think are pretty on their way to alignment with Black Lives Matter, or at least they, you know, they'll say, I'm not, you know, I understand there's a big problem, there's racially disparate outcomes, and police brutality's got to change. I get that. I understand that clearly. But then the next thing out of the mouth is, but why? Why do they have, you know, I don't think that the looting and the violence, it mars the movement, it muddies this. I'll just leave this last statement for most white people when you're saying that. Understand that even if you think that, and we've already spent a good 10 minutes talking about why that is an inappropriate reasoning, but let's just pretend you think that. Take a step back, just a step back, and understand what you're saying parrots word for word, verbatim, the rhetoric that the oppressor wants you to say and think and believe. Just understand that. And then go deeper and say, why do I think this? Why do I feel that? Why am I conditioned to think this and feel this way? But that's step in line. That's like straight from fucking Breitbart, Hannity, fucking Fox and Friends, fucking, you know, all those horrible fucking people. They're going to be talking about why is it looting? Why do they have to do this? And when you start parroting that same shit, ask yourself, why are you doing that? What if you really truly are in alignment with Black Lives Matter? I'll even go a step further. If you think that, like, well, I just think violence is right, just shut the fuck up. Don't be on Facebook fucking touting that shit. Don't be fucking going in the echo chamber fucking circle jerking with your friends like, yeah, you know, I think Black Lives Matter, but it's a shame they had to burn down that CVS. Just don't. Just fucking don't, because you're literally a mouthpiece disseminating the press release for white supremacist anti-black racism in America. That's what you're doing. So stop.
Bet. All right, let's get this show going.
All right.
The news is coming on. The news is... Come on.
So we want to talk about Bruce Jenner. I almost gave a little golf clap. You and I talked about the interview and the way they were marketing it, and I even took some umbrage myself, like just for months, like people were really talking about Bruce in an inappropriate way. They were talking as if he was transitioning. And obviously now, you know, he's in his own words saying that he's, you know, transitioning, has the soul of a female. He's asked to be referred to by the pronoun he. He's taking hormone replacement therapy. He doesn't know where he's going to go in terms of sexual reassignment surgery. But all those things are things that he should have the privacy to go through on his own. And it just fucking blows that, you know, I guess that's part of being a celebrity, and it, people say it comes with the territory, and on some level I get it, but I think this went way too far, way too, you know, people, Conan telling jokes, just it was really inappropriate. But I thought kudos and courage to Bruce for doing it, and I thought Diane did a pretty good job of asking some good questions and keeping things appropriate and civil and giving Bruce time to really you know, be himself and talk about this journey. But man, how fucking hard must that be to do that under the spotlight of the celebrity that is the Kardashian family, you know?
I agree. I mean, I was really impressed with a lot of things about the special. Obviously, you know, I think it sucks that Bruce had to you know, do the interview, as you said. But I don't think that when you live in the public eye, that is something that you unfortunately sometimes give up, is privacy, to do something this huge without having to talk about it. And he's not just somebody, you know, it's not as though he just happened to be an Olympic athlete. I think True. If you just were an Olympic athlete, you could do this in private and then decide what you wanted to say and not say. But when you have a reality show about your life, becomes a point where, you know, unfortunately for him, these decisions that he has made in his adult life with his family have led to the fact that people are going to
agreed. He's not the average. He's not the average celebrity. He's not just a bit actor or a movie star. He's a celebrity whose fame of late has been by inviting the world in to critique his every move.
Right.
So it's a little, you know, I get that. I get that.
Right. But the things that I appreciated about the show itself, one was that it spends a lot of time talking with other transgender individuals mm-hmm. about, you know, just the realities of transitioning. You know, they talked about the dangers. I mean, Bruce himself mentioned the additional danger that specifically Black trans women
face. How great was that?
I thought that was just wonderful.
Bruce talking about Black trans women.
Just
love
even
it.
Saying that. I haven't heard a single mainstream media source say even those words. So to hear it come from somebody who has this huge platform was great. And I know people can be cynical and say, well, they told him to say, well, maybe they did, but he still said it regardless.
It's still
and
been out some, there.
I know that there were people that heard him say those words and it helped them. It said something to them. And I know that there's been a lot of critique on the part of the transgender community, some critiques about how this happened, about the show itself. But I'm just coming from my perspective as a cisgendered woman. I thought there were a lot of good things that came out of it, and they could have gone really wrong. And I was concerned about it. I actually, we refused to talk about it on the show until after the interview because I didn't want to speculate because I don't think that's fair. So I was happy, one, that Bruce even had this platform to do that so people don't have to speculate. And he can say things like, well, for now, refer to me as he still. And this is the, you know, he kept saying this is the last time that people would see him, you know, in the public eye as Bruce. And there's going to be a docuseries kind of, you know, following and chronicling his transition. But, you know, he mentioned that. He mentioned the high suicide rate amongst transgender individuals. He mentioned the unique and privileged position he has because of his wealth, money, and status as somebody who's transitioning, and how that is not the reality for almost any other trans individuals. So I thought that for him expressing himself, he really did a good job in hitting a lot of things about why it's great. Yes, it's courageous and all of that for him to do this, but also you could see that he couldn't do it. He could not do it anymore. And he had started transitioning prior to marrying Kris Jenner, which I thought was a very interesting point that is why it's important for him to tell his own story, because that's something you think about.
Agreed.
Wow. You know, he had been dealing with this from childhood. But then to know that even as an adult, he had made a decision and then backed away from it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot.
And when you say a lot, this is something that, you know, and again, he's opening his personal life to this and telling us about this, that he dealt with each of his previous wives.
Yeah.
This is something that ostensibly him and Kris have a, you know,
conversation
about.
Yeah.
And that they were together for many years and that
20 plus.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, I thought it was great to hear, like you said, his journey and the piece that, so like you said, the things you mentioned, they're all great. But did you catch the reason and the discussion amongst people and media and TMZ really hit a fever pitch when someone leaked he had a surgery to shave his Adam's apple,
right?
That's a, I don't say it's a common thing, but you know, if you're trying to live as a woman and you want to, you know, dress as a woman and, you know, ostensibly pass as a woman, your Adam's apple is going to have to, you know, and they do that. It's a surgery that you can have done.
Sure. It's cosmetic
and
surgery.
It's a cosmetic surgery. And that somebody leaked it, you know, that means that somebody at that doctor's office violated HIPAA laws, got paid by TMZ.
Yep.
So now Bruce and he said that night, again, if you remember, after that happened, he's in his car, right? He's like, fuck, it's done. I'm out. You know,
he was home. He said he was at home pacing.
No, but he was in his car when he came out of the surgery and all the people from TMZ are there. So he finds out, like, he's basically outed at the hospital where he's having the surgery when all the reporters are there. He's like, fuck, this is, you know, it's done. I'm out. And he spent that night pacing and contemplated suicide.
Yeah.
He owns guns. And he's like, you know, I gotta be honest, I thought about it. And just, you know, the person that did that for fucking a little bit of money.
But I thought also in whatever. That moment when he's talking about that, I thought the thing that I like the most, and then I hear you saying all those things, but he really went out of his way to not portray himself as a victim. And
no,
I do hear you when I say this. Yes, the HIPAA law was violated and all of those things. But I think for him, his point when he was telling that story was that he is lucky enough to have support and to have wealth and to have privilege and things that allowed him to have, yes, that contemplation, but to not have feel the need to actually go through with it. And that so many other transgender individuals don't have
that choice. You're right.
So even in that moment of him sharing that piece, he still found a way to not make it about himself. And obviously the docuseries is going to be all about him, but I thought that it was tastefully done. I thought it gave a lot of really amazing information to the public. And the conversations I saw happening on Twitter, I thought were really good about the realities of trans lives and that so much of what they have to go through, cisgender individuals never even contemplate.
Yeah.
So I appreciated that.
I also liked the dialogue, and it showed Diane, you know, not being difficult, but she was very typical of the heterosexual mindset that gender and sexuality are not tied together.
Oh yes, I wanted to mention that too, that they're not one on the same.
And not only are they not one on the same, but you know, let's be honest, they're fluid to a degree.
Yeah.
It's one of these things that as a world we think of as very binary,
right.
You know, straight, gay, like, you know, people fool around, they experiment, they do, you know, all kinds of shit can happen in between those two labels. And a lot of people, I think, and millennials now, are eschewing labels like that.
Right.
And I thought Bruce's answers were really great. And I thought it showed specifically like, hey, listen, I'm, you know, I think he ultimately said maybe I'm asexual for a period of time, just so that people would stop, like Diane would stop bugging him about it. But it was like, my gender is one thing. And my sexuality is another thing.
Yeah, I think he
and they're not tied together.
Yeah, I think he said the way he put it was that my gender is what I am in my heart and my soul. And my sexuality is who I'm attracted to.
Right.
And those two things don't have anything to do with each other.
Right.
So I thought that was a really good point, and one that I think is often missed when people are like, oh, well, are you gay now or whatever that might be.
Because he's basically saying ostensibly he's attracted to women. He's always been attracted to women. Seems like he's going to remain attracted to women.
Right. He says he's never been anything but attracted to women. And he has 10 kids. So I think
he's
been successful in his endeavors with women thus far. And I don't think that would change as he makes this transition.
And I don't know if it was, you know, because he was answering these questions, but he got almost not defensive, but I thought he came out a little bit vociferously and like, I'm not attracted to men. Like the assumptive from people are, if you're going through sexual reassignment surgery, you're going through transition, you're going to then be with men. And now you must really secretly have been a homosexual the whole time. And he was a little bit ardent in his response to that. But I imagine because it's frustrating and he hasn't, you know, like you said, they're not related, his sexuality and his gender.
And I'm sure he's been asked that stupid, just the same dumbass question they ask
for
time.
Real.
Are you going to get the surgery? It's none of your fucking business.
Yeah.
Are you taking hormones? It's none of your fucking business. So all of those things, like, it's just like these typical, like, oh, we just want to know. It's not appropriate to ask trans people those questions. People, everybody out there, if you have a trans person that you come across in your life,
don't.
It's none of your fucking business. None of those things matter. If they want to share information with you, they'll do so. It's not a time for you to sit down and quiz them. Just like it's not a time for you, the first black person that's hired at your job, for you to pepper them about what it's like to be black. So just cut it out.
Yeah. Ask yourself, are you asking for care and concern and how you can help and support? Are you curious?
Care and concern.
Nah. All right. Let's move on to, well, I would say this, the last piece, I think, I don't know who said it or somebody said, I think whatever he's done in his life, I think that interview, this documentary and his, you know, they've been throughout history, some famously public figures that lived as trans individuals. I think what he's going to do for the trans community is far greater than anything he's done pre-24. Better than any of his Olympics, better than for the world and for him and his heart. He said this is what he feels he was meant to do. That he was put on this earth for that. And I believe it.
For sure. Well, Isaiah Washington's back in the news.
Ooh.
You know, that's always a good thing. Not. Apparently.
By a Prius.
Apparently. A Silicon Valley hotel racially profiled him for being an uppity Negro with a cigar. Let's listen and see what he has to say about this. This is from HuffPost.
You sent out a tweet last week with regard to saving lives. You know, I talked about this already.
Mm-hmm.
There was a hashtag called ADAPT that Isaiah sent out with regard to Chris Rock tweeting that he'd been pulled over multiple times over the last few months. And Isaiah responded by tweeting this. He said, "I sold my $90,000 Mercedes G500 and bought 3 Priuses because I got tired of being pulled over by police. ADAPT." And you sent that to everybody, but you tagged Chris Rock in it. You got Black Twitter went nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Black Twitter was like, "Yo, why should we adapt?
Do you look
if
like an asshole?
Pulls over and they're wrong. Why should we have to adapt? Why can't I drive a Mercedes? Rich white people drive a Mercedes.
Do you have a different plan? Because if the man comes at you with a gun and a taser, do you have a different plan? Who has the power? It's not adapting out of fear. I'm not a coon. I'm not a jingo. I'm not any of that. I'm a trained military man. I'm a proficient in all weapons, even an RPG. But if you don't have a plan, adapt is compliance. You have to live to fight another day. So if you don't have a strategy and a plan to get your people from being dying, killed, and in the streets, they do. They have the intelligence. They have the military training to stop you in your tracks at any line of demarcation. So you can tweet all you want. And you can talk about what I'm doing all in one, but I have a...
First of all, you tweeted, motherfucker.
Yeah.
So who's you?
Who's you?
We're talking about your tweet.
He read it like 30 seconds ago.
He just read it.
Your tweet.
You could tweet it. Well, you can tweet all you want.
You did, Isaiah. What
the fuck you talking about? let's keep going. Here we go.
Plan. I have a strategy, and I have an opportunity, a plan that I can give people thousands of jobs, because when people are working, then they are free. If they're taking care of themselves and their families, that is how I'm adapting.
Let me ask you a question.
But who needs 3 Priuses, though?
Yeah,
so all of that don't even make no sense. And they'll pull you over in a Prius, too. Just FYI, Isaiah, you dumb fuck.
Question, though. If you bought 3 Priuses... Black folk get pulled over in Priuses all the time.
I got racially profiled in Silicon Valley, and I was sitting in a very nice hotel just last Saturday smoking a cigar. I got profiled not being in my Prius, just being an African-American man or a black man with a very expensive cigar that had fallen asleep at 1 o'clock in the morning. All right? The security guard demanded that I leave the hotel. I had been flown in under the name of another African brother, Chike Wofia. The N is silent. I said... You asked me my name. I gave it to him. He comes back 5 minutes later. You have to leave the premises. Your name is not here. Please, we appreciate it if you just get out of the hotel. Now, I said, sir, you're asking all the wrong questions. You asked me for my name. Now you want me to come into your hotel with a lit cigar, and that's breaking your ordinance. That's a $500 fine. That's what said is on the wall in my room. So I'm not going to break the law.
So you're still getting these challenges?
No, that's not adapting. This is complying because he had his hand on his pepper spray.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do, I comply. I go up and go to the front desk, and he says, "What is your name?" Isaiah Washington. I said, "But you're asking the wrong question." "What do you mean you're asking the wrong question?" I said, "You need to ask me if I'm in this room, and you need to ask me if I'm in possession of a room key. You haven't asked that question." "Okay, are you in possession of a room key?" I produced the room key. He ran it once, saw the name that I spelled, didn't want to accept it. He just wanted my black behind out of the hotel for being an uppity Negro with a cigar. He didn't like the way I looked.
Wow.
That's cool.
Wow.
He ran it again. He had to conform. He had to conform and say, boom, you know what? I'm sorry. The desk clerk who sent the security, the one who was prejudiced, it wasn't the police officer part. It's who the law enforcement are working for.
Isaiah, it just...
His entire story is basically, you didn't adapt to anything. If you were adapting, you would be staying at a Motel 6 and smoking some motherfucking Newports. Shut the fuck up. What are you even talking about right now? You saying yourself you're staying in an expensive hotel, smoking an expensive cigar. What about that is adapting?
And then I'm not trying to throw shade or nothing, but your story involves you giving a name of someone who's not staying at the hotel. What did you expect them to do? You're not staying here? Cool. All right. Smoke your stogie.
That's not even the point. My
I know it's not the point, but he's making his big mountain out of this. He didn't adapt shit.
He didn't adapt anything. So he's an idiot.
No, he didn't adapt shit.
And by the way, Chris Rock doesn't drive a G500 whatever. So I don't know what that had to do with anything either. Dumb fuck. Oh my God. Stupidity.
You know, he did say he was smoking expensive cigars. That's not an adaptation. That's like a white dude thing, isn't
whatever.
It? Expensive cigars?
Well,
I don't know. I'm not a cigar smoker.
Me neither. They're gross. So are you, Isaiah Washington. Hashtag adapt.
Hashtag you suck.
So McDonald's set to close hundreds of restaurants.
They had their worst quarter this last quarter ever.
Yes. According to Fortune, the restaurant has closed 350 locations so far in 2015. We're in just starting Q2.
That's 100 a month.
And we'll close at least another 350 more over the coming months. They operate 32,500 locations all over the world. So 700 in the greater scheme is only a fraction.
That's still like 2%?
Yeah, 3%. The complete plan to trim losses will be released May 4th. Industry watchers are blaming consumers' push for healthy and fresh options like Chipotle.
Which they used to own, you know. They sold it.
So to also offset the financial losses, McDonald's is restructuring its menu by offering all-day breakfast and sirloin burgers. Now, I'm not one to, you know, say that something is good news when McDonald's decides to do something, but I will say I will be happy that I can have a bacon egg biscuit anytime I goddamn please.
Listen, we were on the road. We made a road trip. We had an early fucking start. Early start. So we're at like 4:35 at the McDonald's window. That sounds crazy early, but that's me.
I'd like to have a brisket before we leave. That's my road trip.
But listen, they tell me, oh no, we got our limited evening menu. Breakfast don't start till 5 a.m. Fuck.
Yeah, get it together.
I've been decrying. I would.
Y'all microwave those eggs. What? How hard is it for you to do it? Make the goddamn biscuit and give me my fucking
I'll take
thing.
Breakfast all day round. But I don't think it's just the consumers looking for better options. I think McDonald's is good, bad, and different. It's the face of low wages, crappy food, bad for the environment, bad corporate business. Yeah. They're like the Walmart of the fast food industry. And I'm sure there are just as many players that are just as egregious, but McDonald's is the biggest.
And
the baddest,
I also
so
think
the
their
bus.
Business model just should have stuck with it being a treat. Once they started pitching themselves as a daily alternative for food, this was the eventual
Leslie,
outcome.
That 32,000 restaurants feeds one out of seven Americans daily.
Well, that 32,000 is worldwide.
However many in the United States, they feed one out of seven Americans every
single day. I know, but
day.
That's where I, that's the thing.
That's
is
crazy.
Once you make that your business model, anytime any shift happens, it's going to affect you greatly because you're depending on people to be eating at your place of business all the time.
Yeah. You know, when you were on your March to Justice and you stopped here in Philadelphia, there was the Fight for 15.
Yeah.
And it was at the corner right where there's a McDonald's right there. And they shut the street down and, you know, we had the protest going. They couldn't get into McDonald's with the one door. They had to go through this other corner on the building. And for a while, when people were going in, people started booing them. And it was like, you know, I'm not saying that that day hurt their business, but I think things like that and the Fight for 15, and I don't think their business, obviously it's doing bad. They lost $500 million in 3 months.
Yeah.
That was their profit loss, $400 million.
Yeah.
And their stock took a huge beating because of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I say good. So, Onda.
It says total revenue fell 11%. That's the number that went down. That's a lot.
If you're an investor, that's ton.
That's terrible.
That's double digits.
That's revenue, too.
Yeah, in a quarter.
Top line.
In 3 months.
That's not good.
That's not good.
Not good.
We didn't talk much about Darren Sharper.
Oh, you mean the rapist?
Yeah, serial rapist. Come on now. don't underestimate the number of rapes
he committed. Serial rapist.
So, he got convicted, and now they're talking about
he pled.
Okay, right. Thank you.
He wasn't convicted.
You're right. Thank you. He has been found guilty.
Correct.
Under a plea arrangement, mm-hmm. And he's going to go to jail for quite a many years. But they're talking about some points in his probation, which I think is the number of jail time. 10 years.
It's quite a bit. Nine. I think he's serving at least nine.
At least nine.
It depends on
good
behavior. What happened. Yeah.
Depends on how many rapes he commits in jail. Mm. I guess. So
it's the other way around in jail.
That's maybe time off or bottom behavior. I don't know. So one of the conditions of his post-prison life that's getting a lot of attention is the use of a penis plus seismograph. It's like a rubber band type deal that you put around the shaft of a penis.
It's like a lie detector.
It's actually a penis lie detector. And so the blood flow, any amount of blood flow to the penis is instantly measured by this plus seismograph. And they've had them for years. They've used them to...
pedophiles.
Yeah, in the same, unfortunately, the same situation. They use it to show you pedophile and, you know, violent, you know, pornographic, rape, you know, whatever it is they want you not. It's basically, it's Clockwork Orange. But instead of having the eyeballs, it's a rubber band on your junk.
You know what's weird for me, though, is that rape is a power issue. And I just don't know how you can... I don't know. I don't understand.
Well, one, who's making these videos?
Yeah,
and
well,
two,
that's
like,
the first thing.
You know, who, like, is there a dude with a clipboard and like a fucking white lab coat? Let me see your dick, Mr. Sharper. put this around. Okay. They, item they, A,
they,
nope.
They have to search worse things than just putting stuff on people's penises in prison. So
yeah, I'm sure.
Just saying.
I'm sure. But it's I'm not. It's weird. I don't know if I, on some level, I think it's kind of bizarre. But on another level, it's like, well, I kind of get it. Like, you know, especially when the recidivism rate for, you know, pedophiles and rapists is kind of high, and it's a condition of probation. And like some of the other conditions, he can't set foot in a bar or drink alcohol ever.
Yeah.
Period. Rest of his life. You're done.
So but, you'll never have to go to a bar and worry about Darren Sharper talking.
Yeah. There's no more. But so I understand and I get it. And I don't think it's inhumane, but I find it weird nonetheless. I don't know why I find it weird.
That it is. It's just a strange. I've never heard of it before. So I think that's a weird part of it. Well, I ran across this article, Raw Story, 10 Things Black People Fear That White People Don't or Don't Nearly As Much.
We're talking like getting killed by cops kind of thing? Or?
Well, let's see.
Okay.
So
this is like the reverse
this is
of the...
not. Yeah, this is more day-to-day stuff. And oh, okay. Of course, I'm sure police will be here. I haven't read through the whole thing, but we'll see how it goes.
This isn't like 10, 35 things white people do that like...
No, it's not a jokey thing. Okay. If that's what you mean.
All right, I want to set me up. I haven't read this yet.
No. So number one is getting fired because we don't fit into white cultural norms. Rhonda Lee, an African-American meteorologist who works at a Louisiana TV station, wore her hair in a natural hairstyle. Yep. One viewer found offensive. I think we even covered this on the show.
Did.
The black lady that does the news is a very nice lady. The only thing is she needs to wear a wig or grow some more hair. I'm not sure if she's a cancer patient, but still, it's not something myself that I think looks good on TV. End quote.
That's not at all framed
by. She posted a respectful reply ladies. And she was fired.
And her reply was, you know. And I'll say this too, like you're saying, like, you know, black people fear this. I have at various intervals, I've been fired once and I knew I was going to get fired. And I kind of dared the guy to fire me. I was getting a draw on a commission and I broke even. You know, I had the sales in. I was like, listen, let's just find a way to part company. And he's like, no, you know, stay, we'll figure it out. And then like 2 months later, you're fired. But like, so I don't say that does or doesn't count, but there have been multiple other jobs where I thought to myself like, man, I should be fired. Like I am really, like we talked about how you and I met. I was a horrible employee. And I don't want to say I don't live with the fear of being fired, but at my absolute worst as an employee, it was like, I hope they don't catch me being a shitty employee. It wasn't even like, I hope they don't fire me. It's like, I hope they don't catch me.
Right.
You know, like I was at a Holiday Inn and the friggin' dude, one of the maintenance people caught me in the jacuzzi at night with a 6-pack of beer. And I still didn't get fired. You know, like, I don't say it's not a concern, but not at all, certainly for fitting in with the white culture.
Mm-hmm. Number two, we talk about extensively encountering a police officer who may kill us. Obviously, we know that black males specifically have a 21 times greater chance of being killed by cops than their white counterparts. It's slightly lower for black women, but not really. Number three, not being able to get a job. The black unemployment rate has been twice the rate
Double.
Of unemployment for whites, basically forever.
Yeah, double.
Current unemployment rate is 5.7% overall for white people. It's 4.9%. The percentage for African Americans is 10.3%.
And we've talked about it on the show as well, that the likelihood of a, you know, we've got a black sounding name versus a white sounding name, twice as likely to get a call in for the interview. The white felon, convicted felon with a record, has the same likelihood of getting a job as a black man with a college degree. Yeah. That is fucked. That's systemic racism.
Mm-hmm. Our daughter's being expelled from school because of zero tolerance policies. According to a 2015 report titled Black Girls Matter, Pushed Out, Overpoliced, and Underprotected, that analyzed Department of Education data from the New York City and Boston School District, 12% of black girls were subjected to exclusionary suspensions compared to just 2% of white girls. In New York City, during the 2011-2012 school year, 90% of all girls subject to expulsion were black. No white girls
no
were
way.
Suspended that year.
No, 90%
were black. Let me
repeat
that. No white girls were suspended during that year.
So I understand the outcome, the data. Was there anything in there that indicated what these suspensions were for? Why?
Well, they had these zero tolerance policies, so they just anything. It's discretionary. Let that marinate for a minute. You, because before you do, data from the Department of Education report also says that black children make up just 18% of preschool enrollment, but 48% of preschool children suspended more than once.
Yeah, and we talked on the show as well that the rate of discipline for black students is much, much higher. The likelihood of receiving disciplinary action is much, much higher. And we're talking like as young as like kindergartners, right? We're talking about fucking nap time.
Preschool.
Preschool.
The Tia talked about this when she was on the show. No, she was on Ferguson Response. I think you were on the show too.
I think it was.
Where when they had their Black Lives Matter assembly, they said, students were talking. They said, yeah, there's been plenty of time where I've walked in late with a white person and this teacher has let the white student sit down and told me I needed to go and get a late pass.
Yep.
Like, right, just like that. Just like that. They are. It's decided that their lateness is inexcusable and the white students is excusable.
Yeah. And there's just nothing to say to that.
Nope. We are much more likely to be harassed by police than white residents. We know that one. Number six, being bullied at work. 54% of African Americans claim to be victims of workplace bullying compared to 44% of white respondents.
And I'll just point this out. I've seen in my various work employment and places, black individuals bullied, and it happens a couple of different ways, but I've seen black men get bullied in a almost like, I don't want to say like an odd sort of silent way, but you know, the whole like, as soon as a white woman says, you're making, that sounds aggressive. As soon as a white person says, oh, I don't like your tone. Like, there's all these little nicks and jabs that I think is bullying. It's like, well, you need to be quiet and respectable and acquiesce.
Actually reminds me of a lot of that was played out in Rashida Speaking.
Yeah.
The play that
Great
we saw
play.
And talked about. And it Great really, play. It touched on a lot of that workplace stuff that's like, yeah, but I'm just being myself. And it ends up creating such a hostile work
Animosity.
Environment.
And it's
because
always
you
so
feel like you're
aggressive.
Always, yes, that's what it is, the passive-aggressive nature of it. It's like you, it's a total gaslighting.
It's gaslighting.
Because
it's
you're pretending
gaslighting.
Like you're not judging me, but you are
you
judging
are.
Me. And then when I call you on that shit, you pretend that I'm the crazy
asshole.
One.
Yeah, it's so fucked.
It's so fucked up.
Yeah, and I've heard the Trudes talks about gaslighting a lot.
It's so fucked
in that
up.
Regard, especially towards black women.
Yes,
and it's just and it's all the things like you said, your hair. Yeah, that's
yeah. I
that's
cut my
good.
Hair, and a person on Twitter decided that I was a lesbian now.
Yeah,
because of my haircut. Just because you can count. Apparently, you can comment on those things just because I cut my hair. Whatever.
I'm your very white beard.
Yes. Number seven, being pulled over by the police. We know that. Number nine, getting sick and not having access to health care. While African Americans have gained better access to health care since the passage of the ACA, black people have less access to medical care than whites in core measures. According to data from the Agency for Healthcare and Research Quality, when we do gain access to care, it's far worse than whites in 40% of core measures.
Oh, yeah. And we've done this again on the show. When African Americans go into, or black people go into an ER, or they come back from surgery, they're prescribed less pain medicine.
Yep.
Right? Because, oh, black people can take it and they'll get addicted otherwise. They're literally given less pain medication.
Yeah.
So in your own healing, you can't even get the right fucking treatment.
Yeah. And then there's that whole, and this is a Baltimore thing, and maybe I'll look it up while we're talking about some other stuff, but about the lead contamination in the city of Baltimore because of all of the abandoned buildings. And it's like disgusting. It's astounding the percentage. I'm talking slowly so that I can actually pull it up and...
I tweeted a few photos when we were on the march through Baltimore, coming up and down Baltimore Pike. The volume and number of boarded up and just abandoned properties, and then people living right next door to them. But it was block after block after block after block. I hadn't seen anything quite that vast in terms of a neighborhood's demise since Detroit, since I was in Detroit. And in Detroit, they're raising, they're knocking them down.
Okay, so here, this is specific about Freddie Gray, who this is on Think Progress. It's more than a week after his death, from severe spinal cord injuries, which we talked about earlier, particularly his upbringing in inner city, are coming to surface through court documents and testimony of family, friends, and attorneys. While these narratives include stories of poverty, frequent moves, blah, 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 they too highlight a public health issue that has plagued thousands of Baltimore residents since the city banned the use of lead-based paint. Developers' lethargic response to the coding changes became the center of a case in which Gray's family won a settlement. In 2008, Gray's family filed a lawsuit against Stanley Rochkind, the owner of a home they rented for 4 years, arguing that the children's exposure to the substance played a significant part in their educational, behavioral, and medical problems. During Gray's deposition, he mentioned peeling paint all of the windows of his family home and an attention deficit hyperactive disorder diagnosis. The lab test conducted in the 1990s showed that he and his two sisters had levels of lead in their blood nearly double that of what the state of Maryland defines as the minimum for lead poisoning.
For toxicity.
Yes.
The threshold for toxicity, they were twice.
Double.
Twice that amount.
During their developmental years. Okay, so I just wanted to mention that.
So there was 10.
It says in Baltimore, more than 2,600 children have been found to have high levels of lead in their blood, according to an annual report released by the Maryland Department of Environment last year. The data represents a 4% decline in cases, while the number of children lead poisoning cases have steadily fallen since 1994, when Baltimore passed a law targeting houses built before 1950. Attention has recently shifted to homes in owner-occupied and rental homes not covered by the law. And it's just really bad. Obviously, it's lead.
Yeah,
so
the fuck. And like you said, the most important formative years.
Yeah. Okay.
Was there 10?
Yeah, there's one more. Having white people say we're exaggerating these issues. This isn't so much a fear as a chronic and sometimes debilitating annoyance. It seems that no matter how much we can statistically demonstrate that racism is pervasive and damages us on many levels, there are white people who fight us tooth and nail with arguments that life is not as challenging for us as we say it is. I've given up convincing white people about the harsh realities of my life as a black man. I'll devote the energy to fighting for my black liberation in our very racist society. And this was written by Terrell Jermaine Starr from Alternet. And I will make sure, of course, that the link to the article is in the show notes. So that is 10 things black people fear that white people don't or don't nearly.
Yeah, I get
much.
It. I totally get it. And the, you know, that's been the mantra for a lot of folks from, you know, August 9th forward. Just listen and believe, please.
But you know, the best thing about black people is even though all of this shit happens to us, we're still the coolest motherfuckers on the planet.
Speaking of which. Obama, you know, every year that White House Correspondents' Dinner is ripe for lame duck blackness.
Nerd prom.
It is really, really ripe. So he's had a couple of zingers in years past. I'm going to play a clip from this year. But, you know, he went like called Bonner Orange is the New Black. You know,
oh, yeah, I remember all those. He's good.
He's a color. It's just not a natural one.
And he's got some timing, that one.
He's broken some taboos. He said...
he's funny. He's actually funny.
You remember he said Michelle Steele was... she's black. She was in the Heezy.
Yeah.
And he's been there. He goes there. Yeah, so let's hear him from this last Saturday.
Anyway, as always, I want to close on a more serious note. You know, I often joke about tensions between me and the press, but honestly, what they say doesn't bother me. I understand we've got an adversarial system. I'm a mellow sort of guy. And that's why I invited Luther, my anger translator, to join me here.
It's literally, oh my God. From Key & Peele. Like, he's out there in the suit, like, strutting. He did it. He went there. He's like pacing behind him, looking over his shoulder all angry. He's literally eyeballing the room.
Hold on to your lily white butts. In our fast-changing world, traditions like the White House Correspondents' Dinner are important. I mean, really? What is this dinner? And why am I required to come to it? Jeb Bush, do you really want to do this? Because despite our differences, We count on the press to shed light on the most important issues of the day.
And we can count on Fox News to terrify old white people with some nonsense.
He's calling them out by name.
But he's not doing it. This is so fucking brilliant. It's not
it
even
is.
Funny.
It's so meta, like trolling,
love it.
It's like he got Luther the Angry Translator to come out and
he
say the
say
shit.
Nothing. That he, I love it.
That he wants to say. So Luther says it, but he's still saying it at the podium at the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Freaking love
brilliant.
It.
Fucking brilliant. Oh my God, some white people look uncomfortable.
To Cleveland, dropping the damn hills. Y'all's ridiculous.
We won't always see eye to eye.
Oh, and CNN, thank you so much for the wall-to-wall Ebola coverage. For two whole weeks, we were one step away from the walking dead. And then he all got up and just moved on to the next thing. That was awesome. Oh, and by the way, just if you haven't noticed, you don't have Ebola.
But I still do.
Remember when that TV station here had live Ebola coverage?
Oh my God,
coverage?
We have live Ebola coverage.
That was their sound clip.
What?
Coming up at 10, live Ebola
they
coverage.
Led with that shit.
Live Ebola coverage? How do you even do
idiots.
That?
We're such idiots. Honestly, if I was like a alien, I watched us, I would think we were the dumbest animals.
You don't even
ever.
Have to. I have plenty of friends in Europe, overseas, and they're just like, the fuck are you guys doing going on and on about Ebola? Y'all are crazy.
We appreciate the work that you do.
Y'all remember when I had that big old hole in the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico and then I plugged it? Remember that? Which Obama's Katrina was that one? Was that 19 or was it 20? Because I can't remember.
Protecting our democracy is more important than ever. For example, the Supreme Court ruled that the donor who gave Ted Cruz $6 million was just exercising free speech.
Yeah.
Whoa.
He coming at him now.
Shade. Ted Cruz, $6 million.
Whoop, whoop.
Kind of speech like this. I just wasted $6 million.
And it's not just Republicans.
Someone at the beginning when he was announcing his campaign, I forget who, but someone tweeted like, and Ted Cruz just lit $30 million on fire.
Hillary will have to raise huge sums of money too.
Oh, yeah. She gonna get that money. She gonna get all the money. Khaleesi is coming to Westeros.
Game of Thrones.
Watch out. Woo!
The nonstop focus on billionaire donors creates real problems for our democracy.
And that's why we're running for a third term.
No, we're not.
We're not? Who the hell said that?
He won both of them.
But we do need to stay focused on some big challenges, like climate change.
Hey, listen, y'all, if you haven't noticed, California is bone dry. It looked like a trailer for the new Mad Max movie up in there. Y'all think that Bradley Cooper came here because he wants to...
They just hung out, they edited the director, whoever it was, of the shot, went to like a table with two white people. I couldn't have looked more like full of contempt. Just like and lingered there for like a full like 5 seconds. Just like,
awesome.
Talk to Chuck Todd? He needed a glass of water! Come on!
The science is clear. The science is clear. 9 out of the 10 hottest years ever came in the last decade.
Now, I'm not a scientist, but I do know how to count to 10.
Rising seas, more violent storms.
You got mosquitoes, sweaty people on the train stinking it up. It's just nasty.
I mean, look at what's happening right now. Every serious scientist says we need to act. The Pentagon says it's a national security risk. Miami floods on a sunny day and instead of doing anything about it, we've got elected officials throwing snowballs in the Senate.
Okay, Mr. President. Okay, I think I got it, bro.
It is crazy.
Oh, shit.
What about our kids? What kind of stupid, short-sighted, irresponsible bull?
Whoa.
Luther's got to talk him down.
Oh, snap.
What?
All due respect, sir, you don't need an anger translator. You need counseling. So now I'm out of here, man. I ain't trying to get into all this.
Go.
Go. He said go.
Michelle's hair looked great.
Luther, my anger translator, ladies and gentlemen.
Luther.
Love it. Love it.
Anyways.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it.
Is it the end of it? I haven't heard any of it.
That was the end of the Luther bit.
Oh, okay. Well, say, play what he just said anyway. What was
that? Was the end of the, that was the end of that. It was him coming back on again.
Oh, gotcha.
There's another clip that's got his 10 best. We can see if there's more. Because it was.
Yes, please.
Lame Duck Blackness.
More Lame Duck Blackness.
I haven't played this one, so I don't know what's on it. Okay. There's going to be an ad first, though. Here it comes, I'm sure.
Buddy.
Welcome
to the White House Correspondents' Dinner, the night when Washington celebrates itself. Somebody's got to do it. And welcome to the fourth quarter of my presidency.
Woo!
Lame duck.
Lame duck.
It's true. That was Michelle cheering. Fact is, I feel more loose and relaxed than ever.
See?
Weed
Those
legal.
Joe Biden shoulder massages, they're like magic. You should try one.
You should try one.
Oh, you have.
Oh.
I am determined to make the most of every moment I have left. After the midterm elections, my advisors asked me, Mr. President, do you have a bucket list? And I said, well, I have something that rhymes with bucket list.
Yeah!
Oh, yeah! My dude, OBD!
Rhymes with bucket list.
With the bars!
Take executive action on immigration? Bucket.
Love it.
New climate regulations?
Bucket.
Bucket. That's the right thing to do. My new attitude is paying off. Look at my Cuba policy. The Castro brothers are here tonight. Welcome to America. Amigos. ¿Qué pasa? What? It's the Castros from Texas? Oh. Hi, Joaquin. Hi, Julian. Anyway. Being president is never easy. I still have to fix a broken immigration system, issue veto threats, negotiate with Iran, all while finding time to pray 5 times a day.
Oh!
Uh-huh.
That was awesome. We'll listen to the rest of it offline. That's great, though, man.
That was really,
oh,
really
BZ.
Awesome.
I can't wait. So he got one more, right? This isn't the last one. No, next year he'll have the last one. So
His last of his last.
God correct. Only knows what's going to happen with that one.
Right? Yeah, because the election's 2016. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
You got one more next year.
All right, OBZ, we waiting for you.
We dig it. So it's time for...
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
Debt Twitter game.
Yeah. Uh-huh. He's not a player. He just tweets a lot.
Yeah, I do tweet a lot. I'm guilty. So I got a new follower. I was kind of surprised.
Who's this?
How
many followers you got now? It's kind of getting ridiculous.
19,000. But so there's like a game, right? People start, like, once you have so many followers, you tweet a lot. No, there's like an algorithm. There's like gamification to it,
right?
To do that. So at some point, people start following you, and the expectations you follow them back, and you can see who does the follow back thing.
I don't follow back.
I hear you. But just realize, is this your Twitter game or my Twitter game?
No, it's your Twitter
game. All right. So... One of my latest followers DM'd me, but it wasn't so much the DM and the follower; it was the combination of the whole thing.
Was it just a mixtape DM?
I get a lot of those, and I'm gonna have one of these days. I'm gonna start like just playing shit, be like, Very White Guy's fucking shit that gets sent to him.
No, that would be a great, well, would be a great segment. Okay, go ahead.
But so, my new follower is Yellow Boy.
From Pretty Ricky?
Yeah, one quarter of the platinum group, Pretty Ricky. No. Yeah,
shut up.
Swear to God.
Why would Yellow Boy ever even come across you?
I don't know, but he's now following me. I'll follow back. Shout out. Team follow back. Pretty Ricky.
All right.
Yellow Boy.
Yellow Boy.
But so we're, you know, as soon as.
I'm mad I even knew that he's from Pretty Ricky, actually. I'm mad at myself.
Well, anyway, and I understand that rules are changing, but currently, typically, you can't DM unless you follow one another, right? So the only way to get a DM is if you both follow each other. Right. So he follows. I follow back. Boop. Comes a DM. And I'll go ahead and read it and let you decipher and tell me what you think.
Okay.
You in the Miami area? Question mark. Looking for one more person to host with me this Monday night at the office. If you're interested, email me. Stripcluboffice@gmail.com.
Strip club. Does this person have a
blue? Oh, blue dot. Oh, yeah. It's Pretty Ricky. It's Yellow Boy. He's got the blue dot.
Strip
verified.
Club office verified. At Gmail.
Yeah. So I was going to say Yellow.
I wish you could have been like, yeah, I'm in Miami. We'll do this.
Well,
you should email and be like, well, I'm not there now, but when are you going to be in? When are you going to be in Philly?
I mean, if it's a DM, I think it's one of those automated things that a bunch
it's
of people get.
It's still funny, though.
It is funny. Huh? But I just was like, look, Yellow Boy?
It sounds like one of those. It sounds like a scheme.
Like a pyramid scheme?
Like you would email and they'd be like, okay, you got to pay us $50 for every hour that you host in.
That's like,
and then we split the door, but we only split one quarter of the dudes that come in between 2 o'clock and 3:30.
But
like
you get 1/8 of all the dudes that you get to sign up to get dudes to do host in a strip club office.
Your strip club office 2@gmail.com now.
It was really kind of bizarre. I don't even know Pretty Ricky's music. I couldn't even probably like identify a song if I tried.
I don't know any of their big songs either, but I know that Yellow Boy's in it.
I just like, you've got an audience. You're doing some shit with Twitter, and the shit you're doing is strip club office. Hey,
that was their thing.
The
they
hustle,
were like
dude.
The raunchy Jodeci.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're like, I think they, basically, now I'm going to have to look it up, because that was my thought.
If he's in Miami, he should be hooking up with fucking Dirty Luke, dude.
I thought
Uncle
it
Luke,
was
man.
Like,
what the hell?
No, Uncle Luke, he don't do that shit no more.
Come on, yeah, really? He don't do that game anymore? That was his thing, strip club office.
Yeah, but he does like.
He's not a Pee Wee coach?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Juicy.
Play it.
Hold on, let's see what their like biggest one is.
I have no shade, I'm not into R&B.
This has got to be it.
Much. Yes, sir. Pandalay, left, right, yes, ears. I like that. Yeah. Yes, sir. I got new shoes on the ride. Yes, sir. Rolling down 95. When does it come out? Yes, you can see in my eyes. It's 90s?
Yes, 2009.
Oh, wow, 2009. Yes,
sir. And we can just cut it up. Yes, sir. Yeah. Yeah, that was, they were like the dirty, like B2K.
I kind of recognize that.
Yeah.
Maybe.
They weren't
dirty B2K.
Yeah, like they always had their shirts off.
Strip club office.
Whatever.
I won't put this other dude on blast, but you know, those same sort of like you get the DMs. Dude sends me a DM like 2 days late.
Why you put but Yellow Boy could go on blast?
Oh, yeah. He's got the blue dot.
All right, go ahead.
I don't know who this other fool was, and I can't find the tweet anymore. I deleted that shit.
I'd
put him on blast if I had his hand.
What happened with him?
He DM'd me. Same kind of deal, like trying to get, like, you know, promote this thing. And it was a 2 Chainz concert that ended like 2 days earlier. Mm-hmm. He's like, you know, come do this. We got 10 tickets. We're like, bro, that was Thursday and this is Saturday. What happened?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, I saw this funny thing. Female stars unite in powerful video on the plight of men in show business. So it was like all these like famous like actresses and stuff. And they did a whole video. It's so funny. It was on Jezebel. I'm playing that or you're playing it?
I don't have it queued up.
Oh, okay, I'll play it. It's fine.
Here we go.
Amira, take one. 93%. 86%. 70%.
80%. 93%.
88%.
95%.
In the past few years, only 93% of popular films
were directed by men.
And only 80%
only
were written by men.
were written by them.
Women get to be naked in movies twice as often as men do. Twice. Sadly, only 70%
of speaking roles in film
are given to men.
And in 2014,
only 88% of box office hits
featured a man in the leading role.
We stand here together.
Hilarious.
The word man is exactly 60% of the word woman. Woman.
The Oscar for Best Original Screenplay has only gone to a man 68 times
out of 76 times.
And out of 13 new plays on Broadway last year,
only 13.
Only 13.
Only 13 were written by men.
And it's not just showbiz.
Men make up only 80% of Congress.
88% of governors.
95% of Fortune 500 CEOs.
97% of creative directors in advertising.
Women make up almost 60% of college graduates.
But men only get paid 30% more.
We stand together.
By the time I'm a woman.
Love it. That was hilarious. In fact, when was it when the one person came out with the article saying there was too many black shows and Shonda was taking over?
Right.
I remember having an exchange with people like what does this person want, 100%? Like you're complaining that like 95% of the shit on TV is like white men? Like what do you want, 100%? That's great. I love the, I guess, the chorus, the refrain. That was good. It reminded me of, was it Chris Hayes? Did you showed that to me, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Well, he did the parody basically like saying everything that people always say about black people, but making it white.
Yeah.
Yeah.
About after like Toronto's fucking
right.
Protest or
No, it was the riot Huntington Beach.
The Huntington Beach Surf Riot.
Championship riot or whatever it was.
Fucking hilarious.
Yeah. We'll post both of those, but that was really great. And they have some great stats after, and just it was really well done and really funny and poignant. And I think it was stats from the Gina Davis Institute on gender, whatever. She has this whole institute. She does it, puts this stuff together. So I thought it would be interesting to jump into music from 10 years ago, turn up music from 10 years ago.
Okay.
So songs that we definitely were turned up to.
It's a big list.
In 2009. We won't go through all of them. It's 28 songs.
Oh, there's one I went through the list and you got guess which one you think is the first one. I was like, oh, that was me.
I don't know. I'll tell you when I get to it.
All right.
I'll play a few of them. I'll play the good ones anyways. So, Don't Ya by the Pussycat Dolls featuring Busta Rhymes. And they have a turn up factor here. They say it's low, medium, high. This just has medium turn up factor. Toxic by one Britney Spears, fairly high. Let's Get It Started by the Peas of Black Eyes.
That was like the last album before they went like way too poppy for me.
Yeah. My Dude. Oh, yeah.
Coming in hot, a little loud. There you go. I know you love Justin.
Don't be so quick to walk away.
You know, I love me some JT, so that's me.
No, I can't front. That was his first album after leaving his
name. They say turn up, moderate, let's face it, Justified Justin is the best Justin. Rock Your Body is the slinky, sexy jam that separated the men from the boys, the ladies from the girls.
Yeah, that shit was
bonus points if you could hit the high notes when you were singing along.
For real.
Get the Party Started by Pink. I think that deserves a play. That's a good song.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I like Pink. I like a lot of her other music much better. Let's go.
They say it's very high. That's a very high turnout factor. Number eight, Skater Boy. She says, see you later, boy. Avril Lavigne. Lowish turnout factor. Right. Oh, boy. We're going to play this one.
Music make you lose control.
Hello, hello, hello. Oh.
I hear she coming back.
Hey. Hey. See, I was in a house. Oh, yeah.
I've got a cute face, chubby waist, thick legs in shape.
Uh-oh.
Shaking both ways, make you do a double take.
I like Lose Control, but there are other Missy songs I like much better.
Nah, this was one of my favorites of her.
This is up there, but it's not my favorite Missy. Lamborghini, blue Medina, always
beaming, ragtop, chrome pipes. Video was sick. That's a good one. And also featuring one Fat Man Scoop, a.k.a. the old DJ Mustard, just want to say.
DJ Mustard.
They got to have a fat dude that makes sick beats and isn't everybody's songs every, like, 10 years or so. And DJ Mustard's
he's the current one. Yeah.
At number eight, Sierra featuring Missy. They flip-flop here on 1-2-Step. Everybody, 1-2-Step, rock it, don't stop.
Yep.
Oh, this is your song.
Bingo.
Shake brings all the boys to the yard, and they're like, it's better than yours. Damn right, it's better than yours. I could teach you, but I have to talk. My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard, and they're like, it's better than yours. Damn right, it's better than yours. I could teach you, but I have to charge. You want it?
Uh-oh.
The thing that makes me put the guys go crazy for.
Yeah.
That's on. I have it on. I have it on a couple playlists. In particular, when I work out too, it's got a really good.
That song knocks driving for sure, man.
Shit, yeah, dude.
Kellis, get it together. We need some more music from you.
That'd be good.
Cause she always she'd be hitting it. She's so sexy too. God damn. All right, number 10. Yeah, by Usher, featuring Ludacris and Lil Jon. This is, I mean, the turn up song of the century, really. You couldn't go anywhere without that one. Number 11, I'm only going to play because I like the beginning of it, so.
She take my money when I'm in need.
Yeah, she's a
trifling friend indeed. Oh, she's a gold
digger.
Way over town. That digs on me.
Me money. I ain't saying she a gold digger. But she ain't messing with no broke niggas. I ain't saying she a gold digger, but she ain't messing with no
broke
niggas.
Broke.
Get down, girl, go ahead, get down. Get down, girl, go ahead, get down.
Yeah, that's a good song.
Yeah, white people, you gotta be saying the broke yeah. verse of that verse.
Yeah.
Don't be fucking doing it on my show, white people.
Two of your favorite turn up artists, Lil Jon and the Yin Yang Twins.
Yo, dude,
I can fucking fuck with the Yin Yang.
I can beat the pussy up fucking all night long.
You love the Yin Yang Twins.
I do.
Little known fact about Barry White guy that he definitely
the Whisper fucking song. Come on, man. Come on. You don't have that queued up.
So Get Low is the song.
Wait, you're not playing a Whisper song? Come on.
No, I'm not playing a Whisper song. It's not on the list. That's not a turn up song.
That's a get down song. Oh, Get Low's on there.
Yeah, right. Get Low is the Lil Jon song.
I got tangentially excited about the Twins.
Take it easy. So. Number 13, The Way You Move by Outkast. That was that double album they did that was not very good. This one.
Fat Man's Dance. I could do this all day. This is a 300 pounder dance. That was 10 years ago.
Scott Storch was making them.
Storch was everywhere. He was Mustard 10 years ago.
I don't give a fuck about your faults or mishaps, nigga.
Alright, well, we know it's Lean Back.
Alright, it's Lean Back. That's a good
one. Lean Back.
Oh, Lean Back. Our boy Nelly.
Ooh.
If you want to go and take a ride with
me. Yeah, he's going to be taking a ride up the river.
Up the river in a minute.
Taking a ride on them taxes.
The turn up song of all turn up songs is in somehow at only number 16.
This shit turns Oprah up. That's all I'm saying. Oprah gets turned up to this.
Go. 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 Go.
Go, shawty, it's your birthday.
We gon' party like it's your birthday.
We gon' sip the party like it's your birthday.
And you know we don't give a fuck,
cause it's your birthday. You can find me in the club, bottle full of bub. Look, mommy, I got the hits. Get in the taking drugs. I'm in the habit of sex, I ain't in the making love. So come give me a hug, if you're in the getting rough.
All right, number 7. One Rihanna with Ponder Replay.
Ah, shit. I remember when she had her other couple of hits were before that, and it was her second. Was it her second big hit?
This was, no, Ponder Replay was her first big
hit. Her first big hit. Okay.
It was on her first album, Music of the Sun. Hardly anything else even got released off of it. I remember this song, and I remember the first time I heard this song, I was like, who is this bitch coming from the Bahamas trying to take over the game? And some 8 albums later, and I don't know how many gazillion number one hits,
yeah,
she's still smashing
you
them.
Can play that. I love that shit. I mean, that beat alone. Hey, Mr. DJ.
This is what made Jay-Z sign her.
Mr. DJ, song fun to replay. Mr. DJ, won't you turn the music up? On they go, on they dance for once and some more. Mr. DJ, won't you turn the music up? Mr. DJ, song fun to replay.
She had that video with the fucking laser beams and the bikini and shit.
One by one, even two by two. Everybody.
Plus, you can hear her accent more in this song, too. I love that song. Number 18 is something called Mr. Brightside by The Killers. I hate The Killers and will not be playing it. Number 19.
Dirty.
Double R. Christina Aguilera with Redman randomly, who we now know slept with that dude's wife. So
yeah, dude.
There's that. Shout out to Rod and Karen from TVGWT.
Gave that dude some tang.
Number 20. She who can literally not be. I'm going to say this. You know, I'm not the hugest Mariah Carey fan, but I will say one thing about Mariah Carey. I will never in my life ever say her career is over. Not one day will you ever see those words come across my lips.
Shit. If you can come back from getting fired by Sony and Glitter. If you can come back from Glitter.
Every time you think she's gone. She comes back and hits you. She don't play.
The point when I need everybody to get to the dance floor. She like that, y'all. That, y'all.
Like that, 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 that. I like that, y'all.
That, y'all. That, y'all. That, y'all.
That, y'all.
That, y'all.
That, y'all.
That, y'all. That, y'all.
Like that, y'all.
That, y'all.
I came to have a party. Open up the Bacardi. Tamale. Boy, I know you're watching me, so what's it gonna be?
Yeah.
But don't take me higher. I'm lifted and I like it. Boy, you got me inspired. Maybe come and get it if you really feeling me.
Yeah, dude.
Wasn't it her audio track that got leaked?
That
like,
was recent, though.
Yeah. It was
but she's had audio tracks released since then. I think that... Lamentably, some people are Aretha Franklin's, and it don't matter where you can ask them to sing, and some people aren't. Mariah Carey has an amazing instrument, but it's an instrument, and it wasn't tuned.
Fair
and
enough.
She needs to tune it. She's a classically
singer.
Trained singer.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So I never, like, to me, I was like, oh no, I hope her voice isn't, like, my fear was that her actual instrument had been ruined, and it was clear that that's not what the case was. Number 12 is my favorite Destiny's Child song.
That's number 21.
Oh, 21, sorry. Song is so good. Number 22 is one J-Lo with Get Right. Whatever. This is good, but it just sounds like a lot of her songs just are like that. Yeah. No, thank you. Number 23 from the duo, Nina Sky. One hit wonder. One of the few on the list, actually. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, bye. pretty hot in the day. In fact, I hear this as a, I don't say as a remix, but in a lot of dance hall.
Oh, yeah, they do. They sample it a lot.
Yeah, Movie About It gets sampled a lot in Jamaican and dance hall music.
Number 24 is My Love Is Like Whoa by Maya.
Yeah, it was pretty
good. This song was okay. She looked damn good in that video, though. I'm going to give Maya a shout out on that. Her body was banging. Number 25.
This my shit. All the girls stuck your feet like this. Few times I've been around that deck, so it's got to score happen like that. Cause ain't no holler back girl. Ain't no holler back girl.
You know, I would have thought that album, when she left the Peas and that album, her first album, it was huge.
That
was
huge.
It was like 4 or 5 like top 10 singles on it. It was really big. Has that sustained? Has her career gone up or down from there? I'm not aware.
I mean, I feel like she's still doing stuff, but I just feel like there's only you don't have that much time where you get to be like, because when you're a pop star at this level, it's like teenagers are listening to you, preteens are listening to you. Like, that's where you get that, like,
your window's short.
You know, it's short. You can't be like that forever. It just doesn't work.
Otherwise,
you're unless
like
you're
Madonna.
Beyonce. Which, you know, you could do it.
Madonna keeps trying to come back and hit that.
She does.
She's had levels of success.
Levels of it. Yeah, I don't think I would not say that Gwen Stefani is Madonna in this scenario. Just saying, for comparing her to her contemporaries. Number 26, Naughty Girl by Beyonce. Speaking of, this video was really good because I remember Usher was in it. She looked all fabulous and Diana Ross-ish. Number 27, What's Love? Fat Joe featuring the most unimpressive singer ever to be so popular, Ashanti. In fact, there's a great girl, one of the people that are always in the TBGWT chat rooms, and her name is Ashanti, and she has, as a disclaimer, not the crappy singer.
Her and Ja Rule, though, that's all they had, like, a string of shit. In the
90s, yeah, I mean, dude, Murder Inc. wasn't playing.
I'm not looking at my baby.
You're Ja Rule.
Happy to be
the
my baby. And the thing's actually, not that I love 50 Cent, but I like 50. And boy, he used to fucking just shred Ja Rule on his fucking.
Yeah, Ja Rule.
They got a beef.
And then the last one, Promiscuous by Wanelli Furtado featuring Timbaland.
That shit was big.
Nope.
That was pretty big. How you doing, young lady? The feeling that you're giving really drives me crazy. Oh, that's not the one I thought. Again, there's bigger Nelly Furtado songs.
Not 10 years ago.
Okay.
Oh, the dogs don't like that song.
I guess not.
Anyways, that was cool. A little trip down memory lane there. I like it. Maybe we'll do some more of that another time.
Oh, yeah. It happened again. Dun, 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 dun. You know it, John. It's another 5-star review. A 5-star review. We need more of them. I'm just saying. You can put in the 5-star review. Crescendo.
5-star review
you now. Five star review now. Bam, bam. DC Bumblebee, we hear you. In fact, DC Bumblebee, you put in this a long time ago, but we don't know because you were in the UK and we only see reviews from the United States. So if you put it,
iTunes is xenophobic.
It's localized.
Whatever.
And the U.S. version, and they make it very difficult. I actually had to go, like, find other versions of iTunes to see where these reviews were. And I happened to stumble. I said, let's check Canada. Let's check UK. DC Bumblebee. There you are. So if you do a 5-star review.
And you're in a different country, just tag us on Twitter. Yeah. Just
Interracial John.
Interracial John. Just let us know.
Where's my 5-star review, snitches?
Y'all didn't read it yet.
All right. So this is DC Bumblebee. I have finally found the time to write a review of this amazing podcast. Thank you very much. I listen to these podcasts as soon as my phone tells me one is available on my way to work in the mornings and continue on the journey home. I have a short commute. These podcasts brighten my day with jokes and stories, along with enlightening me on serious current issues facing society today that are relevant to me. I follow them both on social media and value their updates on what is important and what is happening, as most of the issues they discuss is not considered front page news here in the UK. Once I hear about a certain media story they have discussed, I'll go and search and update myself on something which I could have easily been blind to in today's world. And for that, I'm thankful for this amazing podcast and their hosts.
Oh,
keep up
nice.
The great work.
Thanks, that was so Stacey. Nice, Stacey Bumblebee. That's a great review. Thank you.
I haven't seen her on Twitter in a while either, so we'll have to tweet you out, let you know that we finally found your review. Sorry for skipping it and missing it. Yeah. We didn't mean to. We just didn't see it.
Yes.
American.
And I think there's one more out there that we don't know what country it's from.
iTunes says there's
a
review.
So we haven't read your review yet, and you're listening. You just tag us at Interracial John so that we know to read it.
Thank you. And the rest of you Johners,
get off your asses.
Exactly. 5-star review.
Do
and
it.
You can, and I know there's other podcasters that listen to our shit. I'm not saying I want you to be like, 5-star review, the John is great. Oh, by the way, listen to my show. But you could.
But the thing is, before you say shit like that, whose show have you reviewed?
Me?
Yeah, you.
Sandy Check, Black Guy Who Tips. I've done a few.
Did you?
Yeah. They read my shit. Please.
All right. Whatever.
Whatever?
Yeah.
All right. I tell you what. I follow back, team follow back. If you're a podcaster and you do a review, I will listen to your show and I will review it. I promise that.
All right. That's a good promise.
Yeah.
You don't listen to as many podcasts as me. So
I know.
This
could be interesting. I could be opening up a Pandora's box of a podcast. But I'm willing. I'm not going to say I'm going to listen to your show all the time. I will listen to a show and I will review it.
Yeah.
That's fair.
That's very fair.
Let's follow back.
So TV this week, I'm not even spoiler alert. I'm not even going to say what happened, but Shonda Rhimes done fucked Grey's Anatomy, and I'm not watching it anymore, and that's all I have to say about that. We won't even go into it.
Why are you
it.
So upset? They do that to somebody every not, 2-3 years.
Nope. Not having it. I don't want to talk about
You're
it.
You're done with it?
I'm done. Not watching one single episode, and I'm not watching that bullshit-ass two-hour finale either. Fuck you.
I never was a huge fan, but you made me watch it, and it was okay.
Well, good luck. You've been untethered from it, so you never have to watch it again. So Outlander had a full frontal male nudity this week.
More than one, I think. It was a lot of penis.
And it wasn't circumcised.
I mean, it was the 18th century. It was like...
But I'm saying my point is the actor had to be not circumcised for the role.
It could have been a prosthetic penis. They could have been
it didn't look prosthetic to me.
Like a Play-Doh hood or something.
Yeah, I don't think they would bother with all that. That seems like a lot of work.
Maybe.
Anywho.
The show's awesome, though.
The show is awesome. It's really just so good and wonderful. And
Claire's an awesome heroine.
Yep.
She's not even a heroine. She's the lead character.
She is the character.
And she's
about her.
And it's interesting that she's... And I made a joke about it. That here it's a show that's got a strong female lead that's kind of like a feminist of her time. But she had to go back in time to do it. You know, she had to go from 1960-something to 17-something.
Right.
But no, I think it's great. I love her. I love the interplay between her and Jamie are just fantastic.
Jamie
both cast so
is
well.
So Claire's really good, but I'm not kidding. I've read all 8 of the Outlander books, and when I say that, that's a feat. They are, tomes.
Yeah,
500 plus pages. They're huge books.
Like 1,000 pages.
Well, whatever page. Yeah, 1,000 pages or whatever. They're huge, and I've read all 8 of them. I devour them as soon as Diana Gabaldon finishes writing them, which takes her 2.5 years.
Yeah.
But, so I have a real strong connection to these characters, and Sam Keegan, who plays him, he just is everything I pictured Jamie being. The way he talks, the way he moves, his facial expressions, they just really just took everything that Diana wrote into this character and just brought it to life.
And I think what they've
so
done
awesome.
For me, which is, it's not, I don't say it's unusual, but it's interesting. They've been so successful in taking the books and putting them on TV, but doing it in a way that is so faithful. There's some TV shows True Blood that kind of veered from the Sookie Stackhouse series quite a lot.
Couldn't afford it.
But so this is really faithful. There was this episode last week or 2 weeks ago where she was telling him the truth. And he was like, "Phew, it would have been a lot easier if you were just a witch." Like he was, that line I remember from reading that book, wow, that was, the dialogue was so powerful, and they did it really, really well. And it was word for word. Enjoyed it.
The show is just really, really good, and I love it very much.
It's good. It's done really well.
So that Flash, we caught up with that Flash last night. So good. For the first time, it beat Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the ratings yesterday.
Really? Yes. The CW won the night?
Yeah. Well, no. We're just talking about these two shows going head-to-head.
Okay.
But it's the first time that it's happened, so good on you. Debt Flash.
I think it's as good, if not better, show.
Yeah, it is. It's really good.
On a much smaller budget, I'm
sure. Of course, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, they set us up for tomorrow. We gonna see Avengers Age of Ultron tomorrow. We're gonna see a doubleheader. We got the reclining ass leather seats. I'm gonna get me some mozzarella sticks and sneak in some
sandwiches.
I mean,
I'm bringing lunch.
I'm still gonna have the mozzarella sticks.
5 hours of movie?
I like them.
5 hours of movie? I gotta have something.
Ooh, it's gonna be on fleek tomorrow.
It's awesome. And they ended Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. with Better Call the Avengers.
Yep.
Like, that was their close.
Yep.
Love it.
They don't play. Podcast standing. This week I'm standing for Rashani from Single Simulcast, who, if you please, I urge you to listen to his episode from this week. Just came out today. He did this wonderful thing where he just had, you know, his podcast community call and leave him voicemails with their thoughts about Baltimore. And then he interjected his own commentary and different things in the midst of it. And it's really well done. You get to hear from people like Molly McIntyre from the Peniman Doctrine and so many people called in. So I just listened to it. It's freaking awesome.
And kudos. And that's not an easy thing to do, to have a podcast by yourself.
I'm mad I didn't get to call myself, but when he was doing it yesterday, we were, you know, in Baltimore and coming back from Baltimore. And so I didn't get a chance to, but I just thought it was really good. But I am, tonight is the night. We are doing Daria Live Tweet episodes 5 and 6 starting at 8:30 Wednesdays. Every Wednesday from 8:30 to 9:30, we do our Daria Live Tweet. Be there or be square. La, 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 la. Let's see. Next week we have Mel from the Good and Terrible podcast on, which I just know is going to be really freaking awesome. We have a couple weeks after that, we'll have the Michael and Kim from Something in Common podcast are going to come on. I will be on Saturday. You can hear me on the Peniman Doctrine 0.5 episode. We'll be on. They interviewed me about March to Justice and also a little bit about Baltimore. I'm going to be on Single Simulcast, and actually I am giving the only interview I'm going to actually be giving some real, you know, personal stories about March to Justice to Rashani on Single Simulcast. He's going to be interviewing me. So if you want to hear about my experience, I'm only going to do it once, and that's when I'm going to be doing it. So I'll be sure to post that link. And I'm going to be on the Unitarian Universalist VUU podcast tomorrow, Thursday, live on the 30th. So I'll be everywhere you want me to be. I'll be there.
You're all over the place, except on SiriusXM.
True. And also I'm going to be, right now you can hear the 12 Monkeys season 1 review that I did with on Chris's show, Movie Trailer Reviews with the Doctor and Chris and I, and we chopped it up about all the entire first episode of 12 Monkeys from Sci-Fi. I had a great time doing with them. The show's so good, and the review was really fun. We all gave it an A, and so you can listen to that. I'll put the link up on the show notes. Oh, and if you want to see me in person, I'm going to be in D.C. Saturday. I will be in D.C. at Black Blogger Week, and I will be doing a session titled Independent Media for the Movement, and you can come and see me 2 p.m. on Saturday. I'll be there. Black Blogger. Go to bloggerweek.com for more information.
Very, very nice. You're everywhere and anywhere.
Yeah.
We love it.
Yes.
I guess that's it, yeah?
Yeah, that's it.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, once again, you can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, or Tumblr at Interracial John, J-A-W-N. You can find us iTunes, Stitcher, go to our website, interracialjohn.com. You can follow me at Leslie Mack, M-A-C, because I need the followers, apparently. And you can follow the Twitter whore at Very White.
Why do you need the followers, apparently? What's that about?
Because I don't have 19,000 followers. Don't nobody follow me.
You know, it's the white guy. That was my issue with the individual that wanted us on the SiriusXM show. It's like, I just, you know. Like,
oh, is that what you, I forgot that that's who wanted us to come on. Right. We didn't even talk about that. I wrote about it last night that we went to Baltimore yesterday to do some volunteer work specifically with the school children there, and some host of some show on Sirius.
No, it doesn't sound like a bad show.
I'm sure the show is fine, but she wants to interview us about Baltimore, and it's like, we are not from Baltimore, and I say this every time I go into a community that's not my own, is that I show up as 2 hands, 2 feet, and a heart, and I do what I'm told. So don't try and ask me anything about the play of people you should be talking to.
She backpedaled from that and just like, well, I just want to talk to you about, you know, your work and your activism, and, you know, saw a lot on your timeline and really thought it was interesting about maybe feeding the kids. And I don't know why, and maybe I'm just like sensitive to that because I've fucked up in that regard before where I've, you know, centered myself in some ways. And I really don't want that to be the case with, like, when we went to Baltimore, like this kind of work that we did. And something about it, and she didn't, this is again, no disrespect to her, me, this is all on me. I felt it was a little bit like, oh, here's a white guy doing shit. Let's talk to the white guy. And I don't know. I'm never, you know, I know, and that's the 19,000 followers. There's a distinct lack of white male voices, you know, speaking in this way about anti-racism. So they get a little, not distinctly, but there isn't a lot. So they get a little bit more attention. And then because of supremacy, because of patriarchal conditioning, it's like, oh, you know, Drew can say fucking shit that people of color have been saying for 400 years, but now it's some, you know, some even tweeted that, like, you know, black people say, you know, this thing, and people are like, oh, you know, whatever, you're just, you know, of course you'd say that. White person says the same thing. You're a fucking genius. Oh my, you're a saint. Oh, Black Lives Matter. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of ridiculous, and it bothers me. So I deliberately eschew, you know, things like that.
I just think it's lazy. I mean, you say she has a good show, but it's lazy journalism. My point is, even if she did want to talk to a white guy that was doing work, there's a white guy in Baltimore that's doing work there. Sure. Why does she need to talk to you?
Because I've got more visibility.
But that's bullshit. Then that's what I mean by being lazy. She's not actually wanting to tell the real story. And if you're not wanting to tell the real story, you don't want to talk to me. So that's why I'm not going on her show. Anyways, that's my soliloquy about journalism for the day. Anything else to add?
No, just...
Hi, everybody.
High five.